is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The Reuters headlines are stark. Russia says Ukraine may use prohibited, quote, methods of war. Russia orders civilians to leave an area along the east bank of the Dnieper River. Kyiv says evacuations, forced evacuations, are a war crime. Kyiv says its city and other cities have suffered power outages and water outages. Vladimir Putin says missile strikes are not all we could have done. The threats from Reuters, followed by the threats from London, Telegraph reporting. Russia deploys hypersonic missiles to Belarus. Russian attacks leave Ukrainian hospitals without water. I mention also there are photographs from Kyiv right now of people lining up with buckets for fresh water because the buildings have been knocked out of the water supply because of the drop in power. The Russian campaign is to take down the electricity grid in Kyiv and other major cities. I welcome Mary Kissel, former senior advisor to the Secretary of State, now Executive Vice President Stevens Incorporated. Mary, we're not going to explore the fog of war. We're going to explore the missing component here, diplomacy, negotiation. There is a sense that negotiation is ripe. There is a sense that the Valdai speech made by Mr. Putin within these last days was offering to negotiate, asking the U.S. or charging the U.S. with leading Kyiv to the negotiating table. There is also a sense that people want to oblige Kyiv's ambitions, and that it has done the sacrifice, so therefore it should name the terms. However, the terms include the return of all sovereign territory from the Russians to Kyiv. The reparations is on the table. War crimes are on the table. In other words, I'm describing a utopian diplomacy that is very unlikely. So at this point, how do you measure Europe and the United States going forward? Are we going to remain a monolithic support of Kyiv, or is there going to be fragmenting at this moment in the war? Good evening to you, Mary.
Good evening, John. Well, the two sides that would have to sit down and negotiate would be the warring parties, the aggressor in Russia and the one fighting to defend their homeland, the Ukrainians. And I think there was a moment, perhaps at the beginning of the conflict, when the Ukrainians successfully pushed back the assault on Kyiv, where Zelensky, their leader, was sincere about wanting to sit down at the table and to stop the fighting and stop the killing. But now that the war has progressed so long and so far, and so many civilians have been massacred and children taken over the border to Russia and war crimes visited upon innocent women and children, I think it's almost impossible for the Ukrainian side to sit down with these murderers. Now, the Europeans think that they have leverage to a degree over the Ukrainians because they are providing shelter to refugees and they're giving some weapons and assistance. But really, it's the United States and to a lesser extent Britain that is shouldering that burden. So if there were to be pressure to negotiate and any leverage here over the Ukrainians, it would be from the United States. But I don't see that. I don't think that's appropriate at this point in time. And I think if we've learned anything, it's that Vladimir Putin will disregard every quote unquote, you know, norm or rule of war that we've developed in our very limited civilized age to win. And we have to stop him because his ambitions don't stop at Crimea. They don't stop at the border of Ukraine. He's looking further afield. And so this is a fight. It's a very important fight, and it's not just confined to Ukraine.
I look at the Congress now, Mary, on the eve of an election that may or may not change the numbers on the Hill. However, voices from both parties, Mr. McCarthy for the Republicans and the Progressive Caucus for the Democrats, have mentioned the possibility that the continuing support of Ukraine may come with strings attached. I think one way of expressing this was no more blank checks. That's the talk now. Now, that does consider the possibility that after the election, there's going to be a dialogue that doesn't exist now. Is that wise for the U.S. to enter into this negotiation with doubts in both parties?
Well, first of all, we haven't written a blank check to Ukraine. That's not accurate. Luke Coffey over at the Hudson Institute did a great post on this for listeners who are interested. That, you know, he actually went through and read every page of the appropriations that have been made, and there is a lot of oversight. Now, granted, you know, given the amount of money that's going over there, you know, of course we want that. But at the same time, you know, we also have to think about the goal here. It's not just a monetary thing. If you, and by the way, if you care about the money, you want to win more quickly. So I think some of this, John, is just pre-midterm posturing on both sides of politics. But I think it's fairly well understood on the Hill that Putin is not someone who can be trusted. He's used WMD in several circumstances, not just in the Middle East, but also, you know, on Britain's soil. And he has the capacity to potentially use it in Ukraine and cross us over into a new era of warfare if, God forbid, he used a tactical nuclear weapon and normalized that use in a war. We don't want that. And so I think, you know, you may see a different tone if Republicans lead Congress, but I don't think you'll see an end to the funding.
We go to Britain, where there's turmoil in number 10 Downing, to say the least, a new prime minister every other week. But there is this report. It's a strange report, Mary, but it's part of the war. Russia is considering what further steps, in quotes, to take against Britain after alleging that the UK was responsible for an attack on the Nord Stream undersea gas pipelines. According to Dmitry Peskov, who's the Kremlin spokesman, our intelligence services have data indicating that British military specialists were directing and coordinating the attack. There is evidence that Britain is involved in sabotage and a terrorist attack on vital energy infrastructure, not just Russian, but international. Mr. Peskov did not provide any details, but insisted that the West should carefully analyze Moscow's information. Mary, this is a very straightforward attempt to fragment the opposition to the Kremlin. And it's making such an over-the-top allegation, it's breathtaking. However, it does suggest right now that we're going to see more of this, this information campaign. And we know that as Europe watches its prosperity weaken, there are going to be people who are listening to this. How do we anticipate the future, Mary, given that the Kremlin is very sophisticated about falsehoods?
Yeah, like the Chinese, they know how to play to the domestic politics in Britain or in other Western democracies. We don't know if British intelligence were involved in targeting campaigns. We do know the United States is providing intelligence to the war. That's been made public. Why would Moscow be any more upset about that than they would be, you know, supplying Javelin missiles and other kinds of tactical gear and armament and ammunition and various kinds of anti-missile technology to Ukraine? I mean, it's absurd. If anything, I think the Ukrainians have been reserved and restrained in their responses to these horrors. They have largely, you know, respected the United States' demand that our weapons not be used on Russian soil. But in a quote-unquote normal conflict, when your nation is being attacked, it would be very normal to, you know, bomb outposts on the other side, ammunition depots and parts of the supply chain, et cetera, especially when Russia is conducting a campaign so wantonly against innocent Ukrainian civilians, because that's what it means when you attack infrastructure like water supplies or, yes, energy supplies as we enter winter. You're attacking the civilian population. That's what that is.
Yes, Rishi Sunak doubles down on your comments, Mary. The new prime minister said that London would not be drawn into, quote, distractions, which are part of the Russian playbook, which is exactly what you just said. This is Russian playbook. But we have a worldwide audience watching the concerns about the economies over these next months, especially during the winter months. So to return to Kyiv, the loss of electricity, the loss of fresh water, that is not something that happens on the battlefield. That's something that happens to the civilians that are left behind. What is your measure, Mary, about diplomacy moving in some fashion to intervene, yeah, in a humanitarian fashion? We're looking, what happens after you lose fresh water is disease starts. We know this. It's siege tactics.
Well, again, I think the resolve of the West will be tested, and the resolve in particular of political leadership that has acted, you know, fairly courageously to date, but who have doubts, particularly in continental Europe. Olaf Scholz slow-walked the provision of German military supplies, tanks and the like to Ukraine. He doesn't really want to be in this fight. He'd rather focus on the domestic economy. Emmanuel Macron has said very strong things. He's been far more resolved than Olaf Scholz. But you've got, you know, a new government in Britain, a very tenuous grip on power there with Rishi Sunak, the last of many conservative prime ministers, very volatile political season there. So it, I think U.S. leadership is going to be crucial here, John. When I worked at the State Department, I saw it time and again. If the U.S. doesn't lead, no one else really steps up. We provide cover for other nations, and we're doing that here. But we need to move more quickly to provide the kinds of weapons that the Ukrainians need to win. We have allowed this to drag on. This is a choice. We have every capability to give them fighter jets and anti-drone systems and all the things that they need to win, and they're willing to fight and die for it. So I think these next several months are going to be critical, particularly as we enter the winter.
Mary Kissel, the executive vice president, Stevens Incorporated, former senior advisor to the Secretary of State. She was also many years for the Wall Street Journal in Asia and Hong Kong, a city no longer viable for freedom of the press. We're headed to the mainland, however. Reports of young people, migrants, fleeing a Foxconn facility because of the fear of lockdowns. I'm John Batchelor.